Lucis Trust, a non-profit, non-political, and non-sectarian organization on the roster of the Economic and Social Council of the United Nations, and concerned with the establishment of world cooperation and goodwill, presents Inner Sight with your host, Robert Anderson. He, with Sarah and Dale McKechnie, President and Vice President of Lucis Trust, will discuss philosophical and spiritual topics essential to everyday life. Now here's your host, Robert Anderson.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Inner Sight. Inner Sight is simply seeing that which is always present, but not yet fully recognized. You have within you the ability to see yourself and the world around you in a new way, with new eyes. So stay with us, and together we'll look at the world and ourselves with inner sight. The poet Marion Moore has an interesting comment on silence. The deepest feeling always shows itself not in silence, but restraint. Seems a little bit paradoxical, that statement. Could you comment on that?
Well, it is a bit mysterious, but I like the suggestion within it that silence, meaning cessation from speech, doesn't necessarily indicate depth of feeling or depth of character, maybe because that old saying that still waters run deep has always annoyed me. Mm-hmm. I think what she's trying to say is that the real depth of expression, the depth of consciousness, is found in a monitoring of one's expression, a careful discipline or a monitoring of one's speech, one's reactions, and so on, not just by keeping mum. I don't know. Do you see it differently?
No, I think that's right. I mean, it's restraint can be positive and can be actually create quite a sound if it's a proper kind of restraint and if it's an inward restraint. So
it's thinking before you speak. Is that what you're saying, Sarah?
Yes.
Yeah, which a lot of people don't do. You're right about that.
Right.
Doesn't foster suppression? And aren't we supposed to, as they say in this day and age, aren't we supposed to let it all out, say what we really think?
Well, that's certainly the standard that people seem to go by today. Mm-hmm. These talk shows where people come on and before an audience of complete strangers say the most incredible things, mm-hmm. Reveal aspects of their personal life and of their attitudes towards others that just stun you with the crassness and sometimes the cruelty, if not just a lack of discretion. But modern psychology is right. If you dam things up through silence, things you really want to express, that's not healthy. But the alternative is not just letting it all out in speech. I think there's another alternative, which is which deals with the problem at the source, which is in the mind, in the emotional reactions. You can overcome a complaint or a grievance by dealing with it emotionally and mentally within yourself. And that doesn't require that you tell somebody off. It doesn't require that you speak in a way that might wound or cause disturbance. So I think psychology is trying to promote a more healthy view of life than the suppressed so-called Victorian era. But we're not there yet.
Yes, it's okay to bring up some of this stuff, these ideas perhaps that have been suppressed, but then what do you do with them? I think that's the key factor there.
I think people think that once they've expressed something, it just sort of dissipates.
Well, it actually tends to create more of the same problem. I think mm-hmm. you're just expounding on the same problem. You're building on the same old thought form that mm-hmm. got you into trouble in the first place, and I'm not sure
fostering that's fostering it probably.
Yeah, so you're not really working towards silence or restraint. You're just You're actually
feeding it,
right? Feeding it and making it worse in some respects.
Mm-hmm. So. There's way too much talk on the level of problem solving, in my opinion. People think that talking it all out is going to help. Sometimes that's possible with careful preparation about what you really want to say and with the willingness to listen. But this brutal leveling with just saying what's ever on your mind and with the desire to humiliate and destroy and put right another human being, it's not very successful.
I remember something you said in a prior show that was interesting, more or less a criteria for how to speak, and I remember the beginning of it. Before we speak, we should determine whether it was true. And what was the rest of it, Sarah?
Is it true? Is it kind? Is it necessary?
Yeah.
And if you can't answer all three of those questions, maybe you shouldn't say it.
Maybe it's time to be silent, right? And but today is, we're in such an unusual age because there doesn't seem to be much silence at all. Mm. Doesn't it seem that today people are actually afraid of silence?
Well, you'd think so, seeing all the people walking down the street talking into their cell phones in the midst of traffic and all. I guess I'm showing my age. I find it incredible. Especially because I've never liked the telephone anyway. Mm-hmm. And then to actually carry one around with you so that people can reach you at any moment, I'm mystified. But there's not only the cell phones, there's the media, television, radio, the internet, computers. We are constantly communicating. And I suppose that's a real sign of spiritual progress. We are communicating with each other and with people on the other side of the earth. But the noise level is something that is staggering.
You wonder, though, if people are afraid of silence because, you know, when the power goes off and there's no more TV and there's no more lights and there's no more, well, you can have a battery-operated phonograph and all that, but, you know, the Walkman. But there seemed to be this unwillingness to just sit down and think and enjoy the silence, going out in on the hillside and going out into the country and sitting down and simply sitting there quietly enjoying the silence. And that's very rare. I mean, more rare than I think most people just don't do it as much today. They've got to have their phone with them. They've got to have something there to keep them, what they think, in contact with the world. And it's kind of arrogant in a way that we have nothing to learn from silence, but I think we do have a tremendous amount to learn.
Well, maybe they're afraid that there would be nothing there in the silence, that it would be a vacuum, because they've never really explored it. This is something I wonder about with our young children today, especially, who study with the radio or television on. I was never allowed to do that as a child. You had to have quiet. Now, multitasking is such a common and acclaimed habit where you're doing several things at once, driving and talking on the phone or whatever. All of it is part of the stimulation of the times. It's an extremely stimulating period spiritually that we are living in. And I think we're all a little bit crazy from all the stimulation. It's probably quickening to the soul, but the effect of noise and chatter and expression, the desire to express oneself, is probably an effect of spiritual stimulation. It could be well balanced with periods of silence. I don't mean that everybody should go into a cave and live there, but like Dale says, just occasionally enjoy the moments of quiet and cultivate them.
Yeah, I think it's a product of the human mind, the development and the sensitivity of the mind that has grown. It was in such great proportions over the last couple of centuries that the mind is so busy and it enjoys being busy that it's like the multitasking. It has to be busy, not just doing one thing, but doing, you know, six things at once.
Yeah.
And that's why we try to drive and talk on a cell phone and drive at the same time, and we find that's not so easy to do. And get in a lot of trouble. But I think it's a product of the development of the mind, and I think all of this stimulation of noise and talk and et cetera and music is coming from without, when perhaps we should be stopping and taking time to listen to what's going on within.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that because there is another whole beautiful world within that we should be trying to listen to, and that requires the silence of the mind, a mind at rest and one-pointed and peaceful.
That was a requirement of one of the ancient spiritual schools run by Pythagoras, a school called Critona in ancient Greece. Applicants who entered that school had to take a vow to be silent for 2 years. Can you imagine? 2 years of silence. I wonder if any of us could do that. But I think it's still a practice, because I read a book by a Western Buddhist, Surya Das, who's from Long Island, actually. He wrote a wonderful book on Buddhism, and he said that he twice, at least in his life, has gone on retreats where he was silent for 6 months at a time. And so it is a spiritual practice. What would be the purpose of it? Well, for one thing, to learn to speak properly and appropriately. So many of us, people might say that we right now babble. We speak without preparation, without thought, without consideration of the consequences and the effects. That's the point of that little saying, to ask oneself, is it true, is it kind, is it necessary? That examines the effects of speech, and we don't do that enough. But there's another consideration to Pythagoras' rule, I think, that Dale hinted at. It's that in silence, spiritual energy is channeled, mobilized, and directed.
Right, and I think that's probably one of the reasons why he made that that ruling, so that there could be that spiritual connection. In fact, even in some of the monasteries today, they still practice that. The monks lead a life of silent. There's no talking. And
maybe it's that old expression, I can't hear myself think. Maybe they learn to hear their thoughts, their inner meditation, by cultivating silence.
Well, yes, and I suppose it's, as far as the monasteries are concerned, it's there to hear God,
mm-hmm.
To be one with God, and to walk with God, and to work with God in whatever you're doing. So it's God's work you're doing in the world.
And the first expression of God's voice is the voice of the silence, which is the note or the sound of the soul.
Mm-hmm.
The indwelling divinity within every human being is called the voice of the silence.
Mm-hmm.
You can't hear it if you're talking.
That's a good point. It really is.
Very wise of me, wasn't it?
In case you've just tuned in, you're listening to Inner Sight, and our topic today is silence, and I like to think of it as the power of silence, because just to talk about what Sarah and Dale have been saying, it's the way we develop a spiritual power, the ability to look within, examine and question, and discover our relationship with our Creator, and how we can grow, and maybe even thinking about what areas of life that we need improvement all can emanate from the sound of silence, so to speak. If you want to explore the power of silence further, you might take a look at one of our books. Esoteric Psychology is the title of the book, and you can explore further the theme of silence, the importance of silence to the individual and to the spiritual growth of the individual. You could order that book, if you'd like to, directly from us, and you can call us on our toll-free number, 1-866-695-8247. Once again, that's 1-866-695-8247. An easy way to remember the number is 1-866-NY-LUCIS. Think of 1-866-NY-LUCIS. LUCIS is LUCIS. Our website is www.lucistrust.org. Our email is newyork@lucistrust.org. And a lot of people like to order a general package of information. They like to find out who we are. And one of the most common asked questions is Lucis Trust, is it a religion? No, we're not. We certainly welcome you to stay with your religion if you want to find out more about us. We think that your religion enriches us, so bring your thoughts, your belief, your religion to our organization. We view Lucis Trust as a philosophical organization interested in exploring life, the meaning of life, determining, if we can, what our relationship is to God, our creator, the universe, examining where we've been, perhaps, and where we're going to as an individual as well as a society. So once again, if you'd like to order that general package of information, or if you'd like to order any of the 24 volumes, or perhaps even all 24 volumes of Lucis Trust literature, you can order all 24 volumes directly from us at a 10% discount. And although you certainly can purchase the books at Barnes & Noble, Amazon.com, or Borders, the only place that you're going to receive a 10% discount for all 24 volumes is ordering directly from us, which once again is the number 1-866-695-8247, or the easy way to remember the number, 1-866-NY-LUCIS. Think of New York Lucis, 1-866-NY-LUCIS, L-U-C-I-S. Now, speaking of silence, and you mentioned restraint before, and what came to my mind is what I used to do as a child sometimes if I got into a frustrating situation. Is there any value in the old saying, count to ten?
Yes, we can hear our mothers saying that to us even now, can't we? The purpose of it was to not speak until one had really prepared himself. And so many human problems could be avoided by preparation of what you want to say when it concerns something difficult or perhaps a little bit with the potential for misunderstanding. Count to ten. Think about the effect you want to create, which is probably not to irritate or upset another person, but to achieve understanding. That is not usually gained by saying the first thing that pops into your mind. But it's not only that we should refrain from speech. That's not behind this idea of silence. It's that we should learn how to use speech and silence both in a creative sense, spiritually. And in fact, wrong silence can be just as harmful as wrong speech. Mm. What I mean is staying silent in the face of evil, in the face of wrongdoing, because you're afraid of creating a ruckus, afraid of being thought a troublemaker or whatever. So wrong silence is condoning something that you know is not right. But by not speaking, you're condoning it. You're giving the impression of agreeing with it.
Yes, it's knowing when to speak and how to speak. And a lot of people speak when they shouldn't. They say too much, and other people just don't say enough. And perhaps they should say more, because it's a matter of learning how to speak and when to speak and what to say when you do speak and speak in the right way. And that reminds me of the silence that sometimes arises in relation to non-criticism. If we can hold ourselves back, and it goes back to this whole thing about counting to ten before you do speak, because too often we will blurt out some kind of criticism about somebody or something and without thinking, and perhaps it would have been best if we did count to ten and step back and not say what we were going to say. So that's a very good thing, I think, to keep in mind.
Silence also has to do with how we use our minds, our imagination, our reverie. We may think that as long as we're not speaking, it's okay. But if we're using our imagination to fantasize about the mistreatment of others, the harm coming to someone that we do not like, that we feel has wronged us, if we're using our imagination in ways that create violence or unwholesomeness, that's also a wrong use of silence. Mm-hmm. So it's not only the retention of speech, it's dealing with the creation of ideas and thoughts at their source, making sure that they are true and wholesome and pure. Out of that, right speech automatically flows.
Yes, and there's reason for this. It's not just because it's a nice thing to do, because once one begins to step onto the path of discipleship, then this, and everybody will eventually, whether you will know it or not, this whole idea of silence becomes very important, because once you move into the more higher levels of spiritual thought and the spiritual groups and ashrams, as they're called sometimes, there are certain lines of thought which just are not allowed. And so that's another aspect of silence that we all have to learn, of when, what not to think, what lines of thought we just don't allowed to think, don't allow ourselves to get into. And I think we can begin to even practice that today, because as you mentioned about not having unwholesome thoughts or our imaginations going wild, these are lines of thought that can be controlled, and we just don't have to allow ourselves to go down that path, because it creates more pollution for our own self. Our own mind gets polluted with all of this stuff. So I think that's another aspect of silence, too.
In the literature of Alice Bailey, I've more or less, and correct me if I'm wrong, I more or less derived the idea that silence can be creative, and it can be healing as well. Was that interpretation that I got from the Alice Bailey literature? Would that be correct, that it can be creative and healing as well?
Yes, and in our present day, it has to be cultivated, because the world we live in is very, very noisy, very filled with outer activity, noise, comings and goings, the activity of the lower mind, as Dale mentioned earlier. And so the challenge is to create this silence that leads to germination of something deep within us. Meditation is probably the best way to do this. Meditation is a creative cultivation of the spiritual consciousness within us. It cannot come to light if we are living lives of outer activity and noise and incessant expression without taking time to listen to the voice of the silence. Silence can also be a way of creating peace, not only within oneself, but between oneself and others. Mm-hmm. How the world would benefit if we had more periods of silence before engaging in conflict resolution. I sometimes wish maybe countries like Israel and Palestine could have a period of just silence on all levels towards each other.
Yeah, there is a very interesting creative aspect of silence used in creating, in building work or building the ideas and thought forms. In fact, the Alice Bailey teachings go into this quite a lot. The work on building thought forms, it's very necessary at the beginning stage that the work should be dealt with very quietly, because these thought forms are very delicate, and they're just ideas that are in the mind, and words. Unnecessary words can literally shatter these thought forms, and so that's a very good thing to keep in mind when you're creating anything, actually. And I'm reminded of people in the theater. There's an old tradition in the theater that, well, if you're up for a part, you just don't talk about it with anybody, because that will it'll literally shatter the whole idea, and you won't get the part, and that's a whole you don't go to somebody else. So I don't know if the people in the theater understood really
superstition.
Well, yeah, probably it was, but there is an esoteric, a spiritual basis for doing that, because you're up for this part, and it's a very delicate situation. You don't know, there are a lot of other people that are up for the same part, and so you just don't want to make it worse. So you just don't go around and telling everybody mm-hmm. that you're going to get this part. You know it, you know it, you know you're going to get this part, and then you don't.
It can dissipate energy, I think, is what you mean. And this pertains to any project you're working on, to remain silent about it while you're creating it, building it. If you speak too early, it dissipates energy, I think.
Yeah, that's exactly what will happen.
I'm confused about something. What do we mean by a thought form? I've got some ideas on it, but I think also for the sake of the audience, they might question what a thought form might be. Do we have perhaps an example of what a thought form might be?
Well, all our thoughts are thought forms. Ideas are things. They are creations. Mm-hmm. They are an accumulation of energy. So a thought form simply means a complete integrated thought, an idea. Mm-hmm. It's a fancy term for idea.
I see. Okay. Then, you know, from our discussion, it seems as if there are many different kinds of silence,
yes.
Doesn't it?
Yes.
Is that true?
Yes. There's the silence of wrong speech that creates harm. And then there's the silence that is retention of energy, which was hinted at in the opening quote about the restraint of silence. And then it occurred to me there's another kind of silence that's very important on the spiritual path, which is not sharing spiritual teaching or spiritual truths with the unready. Mm-hmm. And this is a phenomenon that might ruffle the feathers of our very democratic society, but it's a very universal concept in spiritual growth that the Bible, I think, says, do not cast your pearls before swine. Mm-hmm. Do not share spiritual teaching with those who are not ready to assimilate it.
Yeah. I'd like to mention briefly one more use of silence, and that's in music. In composition of music, oftentimes they will use silence as a building tension to create tension. And a beautiful example of that is in the Hallelujah chorus from the Messiah, right at the very end, just before the final few bars, there is this big pregnant pause and this tremendous amount of anticipation that is built up just by the silence.
Yeah. Well, that's a good point. Well, I hope we've learned about the power and the value of silence today. And that's about all the time we have for our discussion today. You've been listening to Inner Sight, and now we would like to close with a world prayer called the Great Invocation. It's a call for light and love and goodwill to flow into the world and into our hearts. Let's listen for a moment to these powerful words.
From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into human minds. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into human hearts. May the coming one return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide all little human wills, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the human race, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth.